Pickaxe.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Go on, you can do the intro, you flex.
Oh, I'm not in the mood. I'm not in the mood for Triforce, is what it comes down to. I don't want to do this.
All right.
This podcast sucks.
Shut up. Okay, I'm going to do it then.
That was the intro.
Out of bed.
That was the intro.
Hi, everybody. Ignore that intro. This is a better intro. Hi. What's up? My name is Sips. I got a wife and a dog and a family. One day, my boss said, "Hey, Sips, are you busy?" I said, "No." "Then put your hand on the left thing." I can't remember the lyrics to that song at all. It's an old Boy Scout song.
It's a catchy one.
Boy Cubs.
I was owned it though.
I was Cubs, guys. I was in Cubs. Cub Scouts.
Yeah, I was in Cubs too.
We used to sing that song a lot.
Is your daughter in Brownies or Rainbows, P-Flex?
My youngest is in Rainbows. My oldest is in Brownies. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's character building. They have to go outside and play around in the mud and get badges and, you know, help old ladies across the street.
Weapons training is coming along as well. They've had to learn to use an RPG, an IED.
Throw a grenade.
Proper ambushes.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, moving forward in, like, fire teams.
For the coming revolution.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to tell a story to you guys that I've never told anybody else before in my life, okay?
Is it rude?
Well, it kind of ruins my street cred, but I'm ready for it.
Okay.
Wait, are you sure you want to tell that?
I think manning up and coming out and telling people about things that are slightly embarrassing seems to be like a common theme nowadays.
Okay, go for it.
So I'm going to jump on this bandwagon.
Oh, I know what this is about. This is about Dr. Disrespect's big reveal last night, isn't it?
What?
Oh, you know what? Actually, it wasn't.
Okay.
I actually really like Dr. Disrespect,
yeah,
I don't think I would ever like make fun of him. And I think
I know
the whole situation is pretty shitty, actually.
But I felt that maybe this was going to usher in an era where people were upfront and honest, because he's such a big influence on people.
No, I wasn't. I didn't have him in mind when I was saying that. Actually, I was thinking of Kevin Spacey. I was thinking about Kevin Spacey the whole time.
But last night, Dr. Disrespect posted a video. When I say he came out, he didn't come out as a homosexual. What he came out as was he said he cheated on his wife.
Right.
And he's taken a break from streaming and all that stuff. At the peak of his popularity, he's stepping down for an indeterminate period to sort his life out.
Yeah,
okay.
He's huge right now.
He's like the guy.
Yeah.
So he was out of costume, he was crying, he posted a brief video, and then he was like, "See you later, guys, I'm done."
Yeah. Do you reckon it happened at like TwitchCon or something? Or just like,
I would suspect so.
Do you reckon I think he's probably a classic American guy, right? Where they just can't control themselves. They have no self-control with money, with women, with anything.
I don't know if that's necessarily an American thing. I think that's just a guy thing. Like, you know, some guys are just...
You're right, actually.
They can't help it sometimes, you know?
They don't have, like, this thing in their brain that just sort of says no. They want to have fun. And I guess it just... I reckon at TwitchCon, the women were all over him, right? The champagne was flowing. He was up in the high roller suite. There were these hot babes just swarming him.
Yeah.
Saying, "Oh, I love it. Watch your streams. Don't disrespect. I think you're great. You're really funny. I'm a part of the Hot Daddy Club or whatever."
Slick Daddy.
Slick Daddy crew.
Yeah.
Whatever. And they just basically were his slick mummies. And, you know, they went back to the room. He had like a sort of dirty threesome. I reckon Dr. Disrespect did that. And I've got a lot of disrespect for that. And
Disrespect or respect?
Disrespect,
okay.
Because he should have had more control, self-control over himself. He made an agreement to his wife, and he should have stuck to that. And, yeah, he should feel bad about
it. I don't even know if it's about self-control, honestly. For me, I'm just petrified of my wife. Like, she can get really angry, and I want to make sure that she's never angry. Like, I don't want to be on the receiving end of that.
The main thing for me is I mean, you know, we've all been at big conventions and stuff like that, and you know,
we've all had
even a crusty old fart like me has had offers, but it does happen.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at how fucking many offers and how many gorgeous titty streamers is the doc getting offers from?
Oh, all of them.
Just imagine that.
He's the number one guy.
He's number one.
Like 99.9% of women are like going after
him. And he's also a really good looking guy, right? He's like, he's got it all.
Oh, yeah.
So the offers from the ladies coming in must have just been.
He's funny too. They say you can laugh a woman into bed, right? You can be really ugly and still, like, if you're funny as hell and charismatic and stuff, you can still you can still get the ladies that way.
So that's what I thought your story was going to be about, but obviously not. We can come back to that, but I want to hear your story.
No, I was more sort of I was poking at the whole Hollywood thing, and you know
who have you been messing with?
I haven't been messing with anyone. This happened when I was a child, and it comes back to Cub Scouts as well. Okay,
So
I'm in Cub Scouts, the Cubs.
Oh God!
And we go on a we used to do these things like
every
year.
There was like a winter almost. There was like a winter retreat that you went on. So you went like to this like huge like cabin in the middle of the woods for like a week, like the whole pack and all the counselors and stuff. And there was like all sorts of stuff, snowshoeing on a lake, and like, you know, it was Ontario, right? So it's cold as fuck.
I always think it's weird to have them be called counselors, right? Because it implies that it's some sort of camp for trouble.
And it was, it's all Jungle Book themed as well, right? We had like Akela and
Mowgli and
Bagheera and all these guys, all these grown men naming themselves after Jungle Book characters.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we're out there. And,
it's like before the internet.
We're snowshoeing and we're cooking potatoes in tinfoil on an open fire.
Oh,
and like,
that in years.
All the shit that you do in Cubs, right?
You make like a dent in a tin can of beans like, and you put that on the fire. And then when the dent like pops out, it's ready to eat.
Ready to eat.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm 8, 9 years old maybe. And we're playing flashlight tag at night. Okay, this is another thing that we did in the woods. So it's dark as hell, you know, everybody's got a flashlight and you run around in the woods and shoot each other with flashlights, and it was really fun. It was really exciting times. Everybody was having a good time and stuff. And then this one kid wasn't even like, I wasn't really friends with him or anything, like, you know, I knew him like just because he was in Cubs like with me or whatever, but I didn't really hang out with him or anything. And he was like running to get to like back to the base or whatever, running really fast, you know, maybe horsing around a little bit, getting a bit too carried away or whatever. And he tripped and he fell down. Okay. And he was like crying and stuff. And everybody was like really worried about him and stuff. And I don't know what it was. Like, I was like a fairly tough kid. You know, I wasn't like overly sensitive or whatever, but I just felt really bad for him. And I started crying too. I was like 8, right? So like, it was a little bit embarrassing. So I was like sort of like off in the woods in the dark crying because I felt sorry for this guy. And then I think it was Baloo came up to me and he's like, oh, hey, what's wrong? Like, did you hurt yourself? I was like, yeah, I tripped. I fell over. I got some dust in my eye or something. Like, I don't know. And he's like, oh shit. Well, okay, come on. Like, we'll take you back or whatever. And that I've never told anybody that story because I was a little bit embarrassed. I didn't want to admit that I felt sorry for somebody and started to cry. But at least it shows that I'm not some sort of like sociopath as well, right? I have like some degree of empathy or whatever.
Yeah, you at a young age you showed empathy for another human being.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that an embarrassing story?
I don't know.
That's a good thing. I felt bad for someone who has something bad happen to them. Yeah. Don't judge me.
It's just weird though, right? Like not a lot of people want to like be seen crying, right? Like it shows like I guess a vulnerability or something.
Unless you're
like,
on a talent show. I guess you shouldn't be crying. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess like somehow at the age of 8, I was like aware of that. I don't even know how or why or whatever, but like I felt like really, no, I don't want like anyone to think that I'm crying because like, you know, I was like overwhelmed by the situation or something. So I just made up a story about falling down. It's like, oh, you don't seem to have any scratches or anything. I was like, oh yeah, I, you know, it was just a light fall, I guess. I don't know what's going on.
I think that's a lovely story, Sips, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, thanks.
I think that it's difficult to.
It's really liberating for me. I mean, I've bottled that one up for years. Like I've never told anyone.
Well, I can't believe that's your big bottle up story. Like that's the story that
everyone's
Sips was
got
like,
one.
I
right?
must never tell someone I cared about another human
everyone's
being.
Everyone's got a bottle up story. Like
I've got millions, and they're way worse than that.
maybe I'm just lucky then. I don't
what
have
do
anything
mean?
Much worse than that. Actually,
I'm not telling.
Like, well, I mean, I've had some awkward encounters with like females, like in the past.
Females.
Nothing like, illegal or anything.
Were they awkward in the same way that Data would have an awkward date with people on the Enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm that rigid, but like, you know, like when you're young and you don't really know what the fuck is going on, like most of the time. Like, I'm old and I still don't know what the fuck is going on most of the time.
Yeah, that's why I got married, because I just didn't know what the fuck.
Yeah,
was
me
going.
Too. I just needed somebody to rescue me from my haze of not knowing what the fuck, basically.
I was like, do you know what the fuck is going on? Yes, let's get married.
Yeah. Well, save me.
I think women are probably much, much, much closer and much more in touch with their emotions than men. I mean, men are encouraged to be these iron stones, these trees that don't waver in the hurricane.
Ooh,
you know,
I like that.
It's supposed to be, you're supposed to be this mountain, this rock for her to cry on, you know, whereas she's always a storm of emotions, and I think women like will cry at anything sometimes, and they won't know why.
Well,
but I think men
more hormonal,
can do
though,
that
right?
sometimes, Sips. You know.
Yeah. Here's the thing: when you're smashing the skull of your enemy in with a crudely made bone club,
right.
You can't be getting empathetic.
No.
Ugg smash.
Well, I think at that point,
you know,
you've
and
got
then maybe even Ugg eat.
You got so much adrenaline coursing through you, like the capacity for empathy is diminished.
Yeah, until after the fact, maybe.
I think that men and women are more similar than people realize.
Yeah.
Though, too. Like, I think Uggina could also smash.
Uggina may be able to smash, but mainly Ugg smash, I would say.
Yeah, Ugg smash, Ugg like smashing.
Yeah.
Maybe Uggina don't feel like she like it, but sometimes...
Maybe Ugg not in mood for smashing tonight.
No, maybe you're...
Maybe Uggina have headache and poor Ugg have to smash alone. We're not talking about killing people, right? Just to clarify. Yeah.
Holy shit. So, no, I mean, it's great. Like, I was just thinking of what you were saying. Now, we watched Star Wars, the new one yesterday. We're not going to have any spoilers.
No spoilers.
I didn't get invited to that, so I just Jingle Jam streamed
here,
instead.
Homie.
So
you were invited, but, you know, you've already taken your quota of being away from Fabby family this month, I think.
It's hard to be away a lot. It's hard to justify being away a lot. So
I watched The Force Awakens, the original, on... the weekend, so I was prepared for the new one.
Sure.
And you know, it was the original, I didn't really remember it, because it was a couple of years ago that I'd watched it, so I got some new bits, and man, I think Star Wars is this comfortable Christmassy, it's familiar. It used to be when we were kids that Star Wars was a nerdy thing, right? You were a nerd if you liked Star Wars. Now if you're a nerd, you don't like Star Wars.
It's like geek chic now, right? It's cool to be a nerd now somehow.
It's cool to like Star Wars, and maybe it's cool to be a nerd, but the real people who actually... I think Star Wars has become so mainstream and so kind of... As a nerd, like, I'm beginning to think that I don't like Star Wars.
There's not enough there for the nerds, is what I would say.
Well,
like,
if you think
about Game of Thrones, that was real nerdy, but now that's mainstream.
Yeah.
So all the people I know that are like mega nerds are like, oh, Wheel of Time is the superior series now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they've got to find the next... They're almost like hipsters.
Yeah.
They don't want to admit they're hipsters, because they probably hate hipsters. But now sci-fi has become... You've almost got to be a sci-fi hipster, because you're like... Yes, I enjoyed so-and-so, but I really think it was very derivative. And the physics on those was ridiculous. You know, that's what you want as a nerd, is something that satisfies every aspect.
I don't think it matters. Like, there's a bit of something for everyone. I'm reading the new Andy Weir books. He did The Martian, and you really enjoyed The Martian.
Yeah, I liked that. Yeah, it was good.
It was really good. He's got this one called Artemis, which is about on Moonbase, right?
Does the guy get stranded on a moon base and they have to rescue him?
Not really, no.
Does he have to figure out how to grow potatoes on the moon?
With poop?
Not really, no. But there's similar sort of stuff, similar sort of engineering-y, physics-y bits and bobs to do with it. Like, you know, they have to, you know, weld holes in the moon base and
air pressure, I like that.
And all that stuff. It's cool. It's a bit more sneaky because the moon base is kind of established and it's got like 20,000 people living there.
Yeah. I like a game like Subnautica, but you're on the moon and you have to just build a base and stuff. And
there haven't really been many good living on another planet, like in our solar system, similar kind of tech to us games.
Yeah.
Like I remember there was a... I mean, Kerbal Space Program is one I dip in and out of now and again, and that's just fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Because I love the faces of the lads, of the Kerbal guys when
shitting
they get panicked.
Their pants.
And they start going, ooh! They look like Beaker.
Kerbal is almost like a trick to like teach you actual physics.
Yeah,
it's like one of these things that lures you in with the cute faces, but then you end up learning actual physics.
Holy shit, it's so satisfying when you get like a a craft into orbit and stuff, and you figure it out.
I'm so bad at it.
It's fucking awesome. It's so good. I had Twitch chat coaching me while I did it, and it was really something. It was definitely an experience. Maybe not one that I'd ever want to repeat again, but it was nice.
So we're having a lovely Christmas live stream as of Before
you move on, without spoiling Star Wars.
I felt like I should move on to avoid chatting about
Don't spoil it, but what'd you think? Good? Bad? Medium?
I really enjoyed it.
You really did?
I thought it was good.
Because I read a couple of tweets from people that went with you guys who were like, I was disappointed. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Like,
yeah, well, those people are assholes.
Right, okay.
And I'm going to find who they are in the office and I'm going to kill them.
You hate when somebody has an opinion that clashes with yours, right? Like,
no, that's not true. What I hate is when people have an opinion and they're like, I didn't like it. And the best reason they can give is other people will like it and I don't like the company that made it.
Right.
That's my problem. Like, right. There are plenty of companies out there I don't like, but at least judge the film for itself.
I think that.
Don't judge it based on other shit. That's what I'm just saying.
I think that Star Wars is, and movies in general, are short form, right? We are exposed to Netflix shows, you know, I really enjoyed watching the new Netflix Punisher.
Yeah.
And it's long form, right? It gives you really a time to ingest.
Oh, shit. I still need to watch that, actually. I keep forgetting about
Punisher. I finished
it
the other night. It is good. I'm with Lewis on it. Absolutely.
And I think that Star Wars hasn't got enough time. Like, sometimes if you're going to introduce new characters, you don't have a huge amount of time to get settled in before the action starts. And so I think movies these days have to be more like a roller coaster and, you know, and also have nice little bits of comic relief. Some people say Star Wars doesn't take itself seriously enough, and some people say it takes itself too seriously. And, like, you know, it's tough. When you look at, like, Thor Ragnarok, which was a really, really amazing film this year,
it's a
full comedy, and it's really good as a result. Whereas Star Wars has always treaded that line, like Indiana Jones, between serious and, you know,
a bit goofy,
fun. And a bit goofy,
It's got to have a broader appeal, though, right? Like,
exactly.
You know,
it's got the right balance.
You got to remember that Star Wars merchandise is being sold to six-year-old kids who are going to want to watch the movie at some point. So it can't be...
Oh, that's where your Porg comes in.
It can't be
The Porg, you will have seen it in the trailer. They're adorable. And Lewis was saying when he went to Japan, he saw a bajillion of them, right?
Well, yeah, because they'd obviously made all the merchandise in advance, and I didn't know what they were, because I'm like a pretty big Star Wars fan, and I was going around this section, there was just an entire wall of Porgs, and I was like, what the fuck are these? How do I not know what these are? And then, you know, a week after I came back from Japan, the Star Wars trailer came out, and it had the Porg in it. I was like, oh my God, it's like I'd seen the future or something, you know? It was crazy.
I think you got to take movies for what they are, though. Like, I'm at the point in my life now where going to see a movie, I'll go see something if I like the look of it, and it's more of an outing. Like, I don't hinge, like, an awful lot on whether the movie's going to be good or not. Like, I don't actually care.
You're just,
like,
glad to be out of the house.
I'm just glad to be sitting in a dark movie theater, falling asleep half the time, and watching
like
something
experience.
Even semi-interesting is fine for me. Like, it really doesn't bug me. It doesn't need to fucking change my life or blow my fucking mind into pieces all over the theater.
It doesn't need to make you tear up and, like, you know, have an emotional moment in the woods, you know.
Do you know what, like, for instance, I'm talking to Ben, and he hates Harry Potter. Now, I'm no big Potter fan, all right? I tease my wife about the fact that she's read all the books all the time. I'm never going to read the books. But it's fun shit. I mean, how could you hate Harry Potter? Yeah. It's just well-made kids' movies.
Yeah.
He's like, and he says, because I hate Harry Potter. Like, it should have been obvious to me. Yeah, well, I hate it. Why? Because I hate Harry Potter. I was like, Ben. I mean, I spoke to him. He got, like, two chapters into Red Rising and couldn't read anymore.
Really?
Well, yeah. Ben's one of these people, though, who, if something starts going... Like, he was watching Westworld, and Westworld has a lull. And he says, as soon as there's a lull, I'm on to something else.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'd rather not waste my time. But sometimes you have to push through lulls in series to get a good bit.
Yeah.
So I think Red Rising has a little bit of a lull in it. And I think that he got to... I definitely know the point at which he stopped.
Yeah.
The weird thing with Red Rising is the lull is at the start.
Lull is kind of at the start.
If the lull is helping to build up or whatever, like, it doesn't bug me that much at all, actually. Like, you know, sometimes it's nice to just have, like, a bit of a break from, like, nonstop shit happening in action. Because the thing with Red Rising is later on, and certainly, like, the next two books are insane, like, almost stressful to read, like, at times. Like, it's just... You know, there's so
much
fucking much going on and so many twists and stuff that
it's just like
gets
every
nuts.
Page something's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, yeah, it does get pretty
crazy.
Nutty.
Yeah, fuck off. Fuck, I can't wait for the new book to come out in January. Jesus Christ. Yeah. That's like next fucking month. Holy crap. I'm going to clear my whole calendar. I'm going to put some silky pajamas on, get some chicken noodle soup ready. And
I was going to try and get the Bodega book out, but there's no point now.
No.
Because there's a new Red Rising book coming out. It would have been my book on the shelf since then. It's Red Rising, obviously.
Oh, God, man.
That's how it goes.
I think they can coexist.
Maybe.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
So how's the Bodega book going? Have you written much?
I have, yeah. We're really, really close.
Wow.
I was trying to get it done in time for Christmas. Obviously, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we are close. We are close. It's been a
you
while.
Wanted to cash in big time on the holiday crowds.
No, I just didn't want to have to write it in 2018.
Oh right, I get it.
Yeah,
you wanted to write the sequel in 2018.
Yeah, exactly. 2018 was Bodega 2, but
you
no, we'll
start
we are sequel. Close. We are close.
Cool.
So I got some man flu, guys. I must have picked it up like for my kids. My son's gonna be it's his last day of school today for Christmas holidays. He's going to be on
right.
vacation for like 2 weeks, so hopefully that'll be
yeah,
a bit
yeah.
of a germ holiday for us as well. We won't get like too sick. But
yeah, here's the thing: if you're sick, right? I was sick for like 3 weeks, and because I had a sub meetup, so a bunch of my Twitch subs met up with me in London, and we had a great day. We did all kinds of cool stuff.
It was
a lot
like,
of fun.
But it was like one of those parties that kids bring their parents to get them all sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like that. It was like one of those measles parties, right?
Parents sorry, bring their kids. Yeah, yeah.
So we all met up and like, you know, I'd been sick leading up to that with like a pretty heavy cold. But I got over it just in time. We go out, have some drinks. I get back the next day and my throat feels like someone's trying to garrote me. And I realize that I've caught some kind of a horrible throat infection and my glands on either side of my throat are like super swollen. And I was sick for another week and a half. And then I'm over it. But now I've come down here and I'm like, I'm going to be in the office and I bet I'm going to get sick from all the people in the office.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, it's one of those things because the weird thing is when you're sick and you talk to someone you know who lives miles away that is also sick at the same time with the same kind of symptoms, that's what makes me fear that when we talk about the future of the human race, it ain't going to be some fucking meteor. It's going to be a disease.
It will.
Some disease
yeah.
is going to come along and kill us all.
It'll be like
and
that superbug like, in the hospitals. That's going to get us
exactly.
all. Exactly.
Yeah. You're going to be like, man, I'm bleeding out of the eyes. How about you? Yeah,
yeah.
Same here. Isn't it weird? Must be one of those seasonal things, and then, you know, your head explodes.
It's going to be one of those bullshit, like, you know, RNG disasters where, like, it's immune to, like, penicillin and something else.
Fire.
And fire. And it thrives in, like, you know, mild temperatures and, you know, the ideal host is...
And it's airborne. You know what? I watched... I've never read the book, but I watched this old film called The Andromeda Strain, which I'm sure they're going to remake at some point.
I read that book, actually. That's a Michael Crichton book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh,
it was
shit.
A really good one.
So I think it was one of his
Michael
first.
Crichton. I was reading the one that was posthumously. I've forgotten. Anyway, carry on.
Okay.
I didn't realize he died.
Yeah, he died, yeah.
I didn't realize he died, but because there's been like 5 books released posthumously.
Jesus.
He was prolific.
Yeah, he
yeah,
was.
He
wrote
yeah.
all these books and like never put them out.
I mean, he's not John Grisham level prolific, where
no.
he manages to find a different story about a lawyer that you can span out to a billion pages.
No, I don't know. John
every
Grisham,
few months.
John Grisham's branched out a little bit. He's had a couple of books not about lawyers as well.
Really?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
were they about? Just
he
solicitors.
Had one about like, I think he grew up like on a farm or whatever, so he's had a whole bunch of books about like, you know, discovering yourself, like living on a farm and stuff. And
jeez.
They're all like pretty. He's
yeah,
a good
yeah.
writer, to be fair.
So sorry. What I was reading, I remember now. It was about it was like Michael Crichton. It was before Jurassic Park. He wrote it, and he wrote it about the Bone Wars, which was those two guys who were archaeologists and they were digging up like dinosaurs, but they were competing with each other to try and discover new dinosaurs.
Oh,
and they
okay.
discovered all these different dinosaurs by like, putting the bones together in dumb ways. But it turns out that like half the dinosaurs they discovered were not actually real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just assembled them like wrongly
right.
from other bits of other dinosaurs.
I don't think they had 8 legs. I'm pretty sure they did. It's the 8 legosaurus.
I'm categorizing it anyway, Lenny. Fuck you.
Lenny.
8 legs.
Pete, what the fuck are you doing over here? The dinosaur, they ain't got 2 heads.
Yeah.
Shut up, Lenny.
So, man, I've been reading a bit more. Thank God I have, because it's great.
Michael,
sorry, carry on.
Michael Crichton books are generally very, very good, but the movie adaptations are usually pretty bad. Like it,
what was I talking about? Andromeda Strain.
Jurassic Park.
Right,
obviously
right.
Not
right, but
so
the Andromeda Strain is a really good movie. Like, it's very 70s. They have computers, which look more like pocket calculators now. But they're like, well, I simply punched a command into the computer. It's one of those things where every button press You can hear a room next door whirring. Like that with every button press. And then it spits out like a piece of paper comes out with a number 2 on it. And they're like, wow, whew, so easy. But this all they find they send this thing into space to grab something from a meteorite and then come back to Earth. And it's like caught a piece of this organic material and brought it back. It crash lands in this town and the military goes to retrieve it, but the entire town is dead.
Right.
Apart from 2 people, a screaming baby and an old man. Okay, and they have to figure out what killed them, and all the people's blood is completely dried up. So when they cut them open, it's just dust that falls out.
Right.
And they're like, okay. So they take them to this special facility, and they've got this they've got the 2 survivors, and they've got the pod where the thing must be in, and they go through all this ridiculous, very scientific and sort of, you know, believable approach to solving this problem. And it's absolutely brilliant. It's not a fast-paced movie, but it builds in drama to the conclusion, and it is well worth seeing. I recommend it. I do recommend it. I don't think it's on Netflix, but Andromeda Strain is a great film.
So it's the classic comet carrying a bit of DNA or a bit of virus, right, from space.
Yeah.
So that's the panspermia, like, theory that life was created on Earth from, a bit of jizz
yeah. on a rock. Yeah.
But like that comet that's coming through the solar system at the moment, not
space
comet.
Jizz.
It's like a meteor. It's like a cigar-shaped. Right? So it's like 10 times as long as it is wide. So it's like a big flying dick
in
space.
Phallic as hell, yeah.
Even more panspermia theory right there.
Nice. Yeah.
A literal giant dick is flying around in space shitting.
Jizzing
spewing,
all over everything
jizzing,
that crosses
jizzing
its path.
Jizz on planets.
Yeah.
But they were like, we should probably look at this thing because that's not a normal shape for a meteor to be or an asteroid to be. For it to be that shape specifically.
Dick
and of course, the artist's impression makes it look like a spaceship. And I was like, wow, we got to go check this thing out.
So is this for real? There's actual.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
This for real. Okay. There's a real cigar
this is, this
shaped
is actually,
thing.
There is an
right.
actual cigar shaped.
Comet or something.
It's a big asteroid. It's a huge rock.
That's right.
And they're saying that if you look at the arc of it and the speed that it's traveling and where it's come from, it's not
it was launched from
a regular
planet.
Visitor. It's a different solar system. So it's come here from another solar system, traveling through space.
Is it going to
for
do
millions
a
of years?
Near Earth flyby or whatever.
It's not called. Coming near Earth. It's
right.
out near the sun.
But I mean, you can see how over billions of years
something
these
would.
Things might happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, you know, what if it grazes the atmosphere? Bits of it get shredded by the gravity and the heat and everything and fall to Earth, and bingo, you suddenly got some new ingredients in the pot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dried up blood
absolutely.
And stuff. Jizz. Fuck.
Just
a tiny dude.
Just alien.
A tiny little
alien
dude.
Alien spunk.
E.T.
Yeah.
Fuck me. E.T. is one of those movies. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys have a movie like that where it just makes you, it reminds you of being sick and it makes you feel a bit sick? Do you have any
no.
movies like that?
Were you sick when you watched E.T.?
I must have been. But every time I watch E.T., I feel actually sick as hell. I don't like...
That right. might just be E.T. Like, it's kind of sickly. I love that movie.
I don't know what it is about that movie. I just... It just makes me feel so sick. Like, I can't watch it without feeling, like, just terrible. Like, it just...
I think that's the
I
movie.
Been,
you obviously
I
just
must
don't
have had
like
the
E.T.
flu or something when I saw it. Like first or something, but it just always reminds
wow.
me of being sick and just makes me feel sick as well. Like
damn.
Yeah, fuck.
I got sick when we were playing TTT the other day.
What, like throw up
you got
sick?
Motion sick?
I got motion sickness from motion sickness.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
It's something about that engine. And you were saying that you saw stuff on Reddit with people saying. Was it you that was saying?
People always talk about motion sickness in these games. It's like
first person shooters
FOV
especially.
Or the frame
right?
rate or the motion blur or the head bob or something that
yeah.
makes people... motion sick. It's weird.
It
it's
is
different
weird.
To different people.
But it would obviously be such a subtle change, but that's all it takes for me to get sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because I used to get travel sick when I was a kid, like, pretty bad, so maybe I'm just susceptible to
it. I still
to
do.
It.
I get motion sickness pretty bad. Like, if I'm not driving a car, I get pretty motion sick, and then I can't go on big roller coasters or anything like that either. They absolutely wreck me.
Oh, yeah, they wreck me, but, I mean, I think as long as I'm not on them for more than, like, a couple of minutes, I'm usually okay.
Yeah.
I went on the pinball wizard one time.
I
went on the pinball wizard at Alton Towers.
Right.
And as soon as I got off, I barfed into a garbage can. It was terrible.
I think I've done the same. Like, honestly, sometimes, like, halfway through a ride, you're like, oh, God, I've had enough of this. Mm-hmm. And then you get, by the time you get off it, you're like,
you try your best, right? You close your eyes, you try to hold it in and stuff. And then you just get to that point where your body's just like, nope, it's coming out. Like, it's got to. And then.
Yeah,
right into a garbage
God, I hate
can.
Being sick.
I mean, but they have a reputation for being like barf-o-matics, though. They're flipping these, some of these roller coasters. Yeah.
I made the mistake of eating a hot dog before I went on it, too.
Oh, jeez.
So it was like a pretty long car ride up there, and we were hungry, so we stopped off and got some hot dogs, and then fucking got there, went on the Pinball Wizard, and then the rest of the day it was just like a mess. I got sick like in the car on the way home and stuff, like, because all it takes is to get sick. Like once, motion sick once in the day, and then everything you do that day, like that involves any sort of movement or moving you around, just makes you feel even more sick. It's the worst.
Do you know, you know Georgia or G-Star.
Yeah.
Right. So she's here. She's a streamer, and she lives in Manchester. She's one of the many people that's come down for Christmas, and she was saying that Manchester has a big problem with this drug called Spice.
Right.
Have you heard of it?
It's from Arrakis. Like a legal high. Spice.
It's from what?
Arrakis.
I know. The spice must flow. That was my first thought was spice.
Yeah.
Dune. Desert planet. You know, I was thinking of Dune immediately. Yeah. But it's actually a synthetic.
Is spice the legal high stuff?
Well, it's not. I don't think it is anymore.
Right.
I think they've criminalized it because it's super, super bad.
Anything that's a legal high is a legal high for about...
I watched a documentary on legal highs, and they have shops and stuff, but and like there's like some wizard who lives in the Netherlands.
They have to like change up what they're selling every
month. Yeah, they have to change it. Because the problem is, all you have to do is change it slightly and say, no, this isn't so and so. This is blah, blah. See, it's a completely different chemical formula. So I'm pretty sure spice is illegal, but it's in Manchester and Doncaster, because Monkfish was saying that he has it in Doncaster as well. These guys, it's not just like they get drunk and pass out. This stuff is, it like makes them absolutely insane, and they're just hopeless. Like their lives are ruined by this stuff.
Apparently, it's really big in prison as well. They like,
because it gets you so fucked up,
right?
And it's cheap as well. Like all these drugs are. Like it's a rush to the lowest price point that gets you the most fucked up. And Georgia was saying that she saw this guy take a load of spice, was sick, and immediately just face planted straight into it like a load of spaghetti he'd been eating or something.
Oh, that's fucking gross.
He just lay there. He was just there. That's it. And the ambulance turned up, and they sort of waited for him to come around, cleaned him up, and that's just his day. That's his day. He's just going to be fucked the whole day.
Yeah, apparently, apparently it turns you into a zombie. Like literally, is what people are saying. It's like it just kind of makes you like just zonk out and just zombified. It's really really scary. Wow, that's cool.
It's not really though.
No, I don't mean I wouldn't try it, but like the fact that I've got those are pictures of people just looking like zombies.
I've got
some pictures of it up on Google.
What do you call people who take spice? Apart from idiots, spice heads,
spicers.
You call them Shai Hulud, the great worm.
Right.
Yeah.
Herbalists.
Shai Hulud.
Oh my god.
Herbs.
Man. I don't know about those drugs. Like, I saw, like I said, this documentary, and they were talking to this guy. He nicknamed himself the Wizard or something. And he was, like, making all these synthetic drugs, like, in Holland, I think it was. He had a lab and everything. And he was, like, he created a lot of these, like, early legal highs and stuff, you know? And he would just, like, cook up these concoctions and put like just like hints of like hallucinogenics or something in it, like not so that you would get like completely off your tits fucked up, but like a little bit fucked up sort of thing.
People are always going to put
just so weird
dumb stuff up their nose or in their ass or whatever. Yeah. This is what people do. It's like from caveman times. You know, Ugg was like, Ugg find weird thing in forest.
In Ugg's bum.
Stick it up bum. Would Uggina like to try? No, Uggina is not stupid. Why Ugg stick stupid things up bum?
Uggina want coke, daddy. Ugg no coke. Ugg broke, bitch.
Is Agina's pimp now? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But I'm not sure where
it's a complicated relationship.
When drugs get involved, everyone becomes a pimp, right? Like,
And everyone's a victim in a way.
But since the dawn of time, you know, people have been experimenting with this dumb stuff. Or else how would we know? Found out that you can eat some of these things or that some things were nice.
Smoking tobacco,
Do you think that's why people dare each other to do stupid things? Ugg dare Krug to eat red mushroom. Krug not want to eat red mushroom. Oh, Krug scared like Uggina. Ooh, 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 ooh. Okay, Krug, eat. Oh, Krug died. Uggina, don't eat red mushroom.
It killed Krug.
Poop in display toilet.
Krug do stupid thing. Not know why.
Oh, God. Man.
I think that's literally the only way.
terrible accident happened.
Krug fall face Krug first on red mushroom.
Krug not well.
But the thing is, you couldn't even rely on animals to teach you which ones were good to eat, because animals can eat all kinds of shit that's poisonous for us or will
Vice
kill us.
Vice versa, yeah, like dogs can't eat chocolate.
Exactly.
You know? Fucking, if we'd been like, you know, what is this strange brown thing? Give to dog. Oh no, dog has died. Must not be good for human.
What's the caveman dog name? We've got Ugg, Uggina, and Krug, sadly, who's dead.
Krug.
So you'd need a dog.
Krug, sad. Krug dead. Krug face planted into spaghetti barf.
What would a caveman's dog be called?
I think it would just be called dog. Like, dog. That's dog. Pretty, yeah, pretty caveman.
Ugg dog. Ugg dog.
Yeah.
Ugg dog eat chocolate. Don't know why I have chocolate.
What about you?
Ugg dog shitting everywhere now. Ugg dare Krug to eat dog poo.
Krug eat dog poo. Krug fine.
I like this like caveman jackass episode that's just
developing. That's how we got here. Jackass.
Ugg,
that's
Ugg dare Krug go downhill shopping cart.
Fucking hell. I'd watch that.
I would like to see cavemen nowadays. I would like to see what they make
nowadays.
Of it. I was thinking what would be interesting would to take someone from just like 200 or 300 years ago. Like, you know, have you heard of Samuel Pepys?
Yeah.
So Samuel Pepys was like, for anyone that doesn't know, he was a diarist, very famous diarist. He was like, he was a reasonably important guy. Like, he had pretty important jobs in his day. I think he was like in charge of the Navy or something at one point, but not in the military way.
Right.
And he was like an advisor to the king. He lived right around the time of the Great Fire of London, which was like 1666.
That's right.
He was around. He's got this like first-hand account of life in pre-Restoration London. So Restoration London was like post-Great Fire, obviously. And it's fascinating. And his daily life, he's going here, he's meeting this guy, he's having lunch there. He details in his diary how he has sex with prostitutes and stuff like this. No biggie.
Nice.
And just talks a whole bunch of stuff. Now I'm thinking, like, his life was completely different to the way ours is now. And his values were completely different, everything like that. And that he's not that far removed. 300 years isn't really that long. But for human beings, it is for us.
It's pretty long.
It is for us, but it's actually not that long. If you think about it, that's nothing.
It's a blip. You know?
I mean, there are people that are over 100 years old. So imagine three of those people. That's it. You're in Samuel Pepys's time. It's crazy.
It just shows,
fuck, man. I don't want to be 100 years old. Like, man.
That's not what we're saying.
No, we're not. I'm just saying that if you can think about it, there are people who've been alive. I mean, I think one of the oldest people alive was born in like 1898 or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, there's like, I think the oldest person alive is like 125 years old or something.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's like French, possibly.
So a couple of them, and you're right back in Restoration London.
It is interesting how the different values, I mean, how we haven't changed as organic species since then, but what we perceive to be correct and wrong, or good or bad, or right or wrong, or evil or good.
She's not alive anymore, but she died. So, okay, the oldest verified person on record is French woman Jeanne Calmont, who was born in 1875.
Jesus.
And died in 1997.
Jesus.
All right, so she lived for 122 years and 164 days.
Man, I bet she was still getting out and about.
Super having a great
centenarians.
Time.
That's what they call them.
Super centenarians.
Super centenarians.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Japanese woman who lived for 117 years.
Yeah.
They have a lot of these dudes where it's just like their birth certificate is just a handwritten note that they just kept in a bag in like a barn somewhere. And they were like, I was born in 1703. What of it? You're like, could you prove it? Well, there's my birth certificate. Well, it's just that birth and certificate are both spelt wrong. And there's no photograph. And it looks like it's in your handwriting. That's me. All right. You know, that's the proof.
The Japanese woman is called Nabi Tajima. She was born on the 4th of August, 1900, 117 years ago. Wow. And she's still alive.
Damn.
That's nuts, eh? And there's also another one. What's it? Well, okay, there's two Japanese people. There's also Chiyo Miyako, who was born on the 2nd of May, 1901. He's lived for 116 years.
Yeah.
And it's still
I think
alive
they put it down to the seafood
crazy.
Diet, and they drink a lot of tea. And they're not,
right.
I think in general, the Japanese lifestyle is quite healthy.
It seems to be there's four Japanese people still alive who are over 110 years old.
Yeah.
And two Italians. And there's one American.
That's
there's
right.
There's one American here.
And so,
Delphine Gibson. She's born in 1903. She's still alive, 114 years old. She was born on the 17th of August, 1903. So imagine sitting down and having a powwow with Debbie.
When you look at these people, right, there's like three large groups of people who are the most long-lived people in the world, okay? And there's one of them is in a group of people in Japan. One of them is these group of people in Italy who have this Mediterranean diet. And one of them is this group of people in America who are quite religious. And I think that I think the commonalities between them is they don't eat meat. That doesn't mean they're like necessarily vegetarian. I think they still have like I think they have a little, some of them have some seafood. I think the Italians have quite a bit of cheese, but I think they're also there are vegetarianism is definitely a common thing. Like not to the extent like some people I meet out in the world are like if they don't have meat for lunch, breakfast, and dinner, they're angry. Right? It's like. It's like my parents come around and, you know, I'm like, you know, shall we just have a cheese sandwich? And my dad's like, oh, I need to have some meat. You know, what are you talking about? Yeah. You got ham. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, you're not giving yourself enough nourishment. But actually...
Yeah, don't want to eat it every day. So, we're not meant to eat it every day.
So they obviously have things that are unique. You know, the Japanese people drink tea, but the Americans and the Italians certainly don't. And some of the other people. So I think the Italians have, but one of the other things was they have is that they all are still exercising. They're still active. You know, they're still walking miles every day. Usually, that's a real signifier of longevity. Mm.
And then the other one, they do a lot of spice. A hell of a lot of spice.
They take a lot of. They just are injecting it directly into their ass, and they're eating all the red mushrooms
into their eyeballs and stuff.
No, what was the third?
The other third thing was community, right? It's to have like that. That they have this good support structure of family and friends around them. They have this tight knit community, and so it's the people in the church in America. It's the people in the Mediterranean islands in Italy, and it's the Japanese sort of. When we were in Japan, I remember. We'd walk through this little sort of town or something, and there would be all these old people out there in a big circle in the sunshine, you know, doing like dancing around and stuff.
Nice.
And it was really surprising, I guess, to see, because that's not what I'm used to seeing. I guess certainly in the UK, people are a little bit more insular. Families and groups are a little bit smaller. You know, I don't think putting people in old folks' homes is the same as what they have in Japan necessarily, or some of these tight-knit communities where they respect their elders and they live with them and they look after them and they live in these larger groups. And I don't know. So yeah, stay active, don't eat too much meat, and have a good community around you. Don't be lonely. You know, get out there, join groups.
Talking about old folks' homes, there's an old folks' home near me in Twickenham that's like an old folks' home for actors.
Yeah.
And stage performers, and they're all like super old, so you've never heard of any of them, but they're obviously famous in their day. So my mum looked them up and she was like, oh, I remember him, he was quite the hunk in his time.
Right.
Yeah. And now they're living in that home. Like, you never see them, but the house is amazing and they have all kinds of cool stuff going on. Occasionally you'll see like a party through the window, you'll see like a party when my face is pressed up against it trying to catch a glimpse of what's going on in there. You know, they appear to be having a good time and everything. They have good Christmas decorations every year. But I was like, maybe that's really good. Maybe the actors are going to be happy because they're in a home with other actors and they've got like a social thing going on. I bet their Christmas play is knockout. Like, I bet that's amazing. But maybe that's it, being stuck on your own in one of those granny flats, praying that your kids visit you once a fortnight or whatever.
Oh, God.
And that can't be healthy.
No, I don't think it is. I think physical health, though, is just as important as mental health. I think that people underestimate that a lot, and you could see it a lot that people, like, almost like, you know, when, I hate to say it, when, you know, you've got this old couple and one of them dies, the other one usually doesn't stick around much longer, do they? And it's certainly a thing. That
I think maybe having the internet will change that.
Cannot be so good.
As long as the Dota servers are running, I'm good.
Right, I see. So if your wife were to, like, conk it, you wouldn't even notice. Yeah, you'd be like, well, I'm like,
better go queue US East.
It's great.
Oh, man.
We live in interesting times, definitely.
We do, yeah. I just imagine that old Debbie from the 1900s all the way up to, like, you know, like, born in 1901 and then living through everything that led up to, like, 2017.
The entirety of the 20th century, yeah.
I mean, that's fucking crazy. She lived through two world wars, like, countless fucking conflicts, like, that America got involved in, as she, you know, she being America.
She went from a world with no cars to cars everywhere.
Absolutely,
flight became a thing. We went into space.
9/11 and terrorism and space, Jesus. JFK, like, holy shit, so much stuff has happened in her lifetime. It's insane.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, like, people sort of, I think a lot of people in our age seem to think that science is going to dig them out of holes almost. It's like going to be like, oh, you know, by the time I'm old enough to get this disease, they will have solved that disease, you know, or by the time, you know, global warming is a thing, the scientists with the boffins in the lab will have come up with some answer for it, so we won't have to bother, you know, terribly worry about it.
Well, it's weird though, because the world is, like, we've talked about this before, I'm sure, the world's changed a lot since, like, the 60s and the 70s. I think, like, in the 60s and the 70s, there was a sort of spirit of, like, progressiveness and, you know, like, curing things and solving problems and doing stuff because it was, like, really awesome and stuff, and now It's a lot more sort of focused on how much money you can make off these things, and it hamstrings the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So, like, instead of curing diseases, now we manage them and we charge people for the management of those diseases.
I think that's that's a quite cynical outlook on it, but I think that that is just an inevitable consequence of the way that our economy is set up. You know, I completely agree with what you said there, that if you were in charge of a big $1 billion drug company and someone in your company came to you and said, oh, hey, Billy, we've come, that's my name, head of the company.
Billy.
Hey, Billy, listen.
We've cured it.
We've come up with a cure for AIDS, and he's like, well, quickly hide that. We're not gonna fucking, you know, we're not gonna make any money if we cure it. We need to treat it. You know, I want treatments.
I know people who've worked for those big companies, like GlaxoSmithKline and stuff like that, and they're not actively working on cures for anything. That's not what they do. All they do is they think, how can we manage it? Like, that's literally, it's not that if they stumbled across the cure for that, they would bury it. I think it's literally that they're just avoiding working on stuff that looks like it might cure things.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, diseases that, it's a profit-driven business, you know, if it's like, you know, if we've got a disease that's affecting this many people, then we can make this much money. You know, if this disease is a bit rare, it's going to be not that profitable for us to make a cure for it. But also that kind of encourages them to make up diseases almost as well, or to try and inform, define what diseases are. I think this is the most difficult thing when it comes to mental health, because everyone's different. Everyone's mental health is different. And so how do you do it? How do you make a drug for that works for thing that works
for if you look at something like autism, if you look at autism, the idea that there's been an explosion in the number of people that have autism is as wrong as saying that there's been, like, an explosion in the number of people diagnosed with carpal tunnel, right? Before people knew what carpal tunnel was, of course there were no fucking people being diagnosed with it. Same with autism. Before it was fully understood, or as well as it is now, of course people weren't being diagnosed with it as much. It's nothing. There's not been an explosion in cases. It's been an explosion in diagnosis. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Autism is, like, one of those ones a bit like OCD we talked about a couple of episodes ago, where, you know, people claim to have OCD when they don't have it. And it's the same with autism. People accuse other people of having autism when they clearly don't have it. Because they display, like, one behavior of, like, an autistic person. You know, they call them autistic or whatever. And they're not diagnosed autistic. They're not autistic.
Yeah.
But it's, like, one of those things that just gets thrown around very loosely now.
I think it's a little bit like your emotional thing, Sips. You're almost, like, saying, oh, well, I had an experience where I was sympathetic to a guy who'd fallen over when I was 8 years old.
What's wrong with me?
And so you're saying, what's wrong with me?
I'm some sort of pussy. What's wrong with me?
But if you haven't had experiences like that, or you have, it's totally fine. Like, it doesn't make you weird or different to not, you know, when you're a kid and you're not really sure, and then your mind is, like, setting up. Like, I'm sure everyone's had embarrassing moments where they, I don't know, pooped the bed, and I'm not talking about myself.
God, so, you
know,
many times.
Or,
like,
you know, said something that was mean or you know, don't feel bad about that, you know, because the fact that you're almost, like, the fact that you're aware that happened kind of negates that. It's like people who are actually insane don't think they're insane. Sure,
no, that's it. Yeah,
it's kind of, because you're able to sort of have a little think around it. Don't overthink it either. Don't get stuck in the. It's a complicated.
Don't be hyper aware of everything that you do. But, like, you know, if you have some sort of, like, ability to, like, reflect upon yourself, sort of thing, and you're probably sort of okay.
Yeah,
but, like, If you think that there's nothing wrong with you and you
unless
know,
you're
people...
reflecting on how delicious human flesh is, like yeah. if you're yeah. thinking, man, yeah, yeah, that dude I killed in 8, that really was tasty.
So, I mean, okay, this, it, this brings me on to one thing, I suppose, about Star Wars, right? And I don't know whether, this isn't a spoiler.
Okay.
Star Wars people are like stormtroopers, okay? Not because they've got the masks on and because they're all uniform, they aren't people. Right. And so you can blow them up and fling them off cliffs and do all this to them. Yep. Right. If they had their masks open and they had human faces and you saw them contort into horrific, you know, or have their chins like blown off.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, it would like be a Finn. Very different movie.
Yeah. Yeah. He was humanized the moment he took his hat off. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was,
that's right.
He suddenly became. And so it's kind of but also in the same way. There is one bit in the new Star Wars, which if you really are like super anti-spoilers, this is, I don't think this is a spoiler, but if you are super anti-spoilers and you haven't seen the movie yet and you're like,
just
I don't want to hear anything.
For a second.
Just,
no,
just,
don't pause. Just how long are you going to mute
skip?
For?
Like literally a minute.
Okay. 1 minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, so here we go. So this is
so Chewie dies.
It's a bit with, and, there's a bit with Porgs, right?
Right.
And there's a bit where, it's like a throwaway scene where Chewbacca is holding a cooked porg.
Right.
And it's like a little miniature chicken. It looks a rotisserie chicken that has been cooked, like a Tesco chicken.
It looks delicious.
It looks delicious. But the point is that that almost, for me, defined like the difference between what we see in supermarkets and what we see in... For kids, they won't even be able to tell that they won't even be able to associate that cooked porg with a real porg.
Maybe, yeah.
Right? Because it's like so different.
I think he's just
almost.
Eating chicken somehow.
Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying? Because most kids like don't have that difference. But if you'd actually seen Chewbacca have to put a net over a porg and then like strangle the porg to death and then like pluck all the feathers off
slit
the porg.
Slit its jugular and drain it
and like,
out
drain it of
stuff,
its blood, stick a fucking rotisserie thing up its ass and, you know, roast it on the fire for 5 minutes.
And then you witness Chewbacca sitting there thinking, hang on a second, I've done this once. What if I did it a million times?
Well, exactly.
And then he
for
starts,
a start,
like, a
all the porgs are sitting around him in this little bit of the film, being like, you know, if those porgs had seen him, like, they'd be running a mile for a start.
Yeah.
You know, because he's surrounded by. So anyway, that I don't think that's a real spoiler.
It's not a real spoiler. It's not a clutch scene.
It's not important, you know. But for me, that was a weird, really weird moment in the movie that almost signified that, the people who've made this movie are very hyper aware of what they can and can't show to kids and what's okay to show to kids and what the censored violence is. It's like stormtroopers are okay to kill and maim,
right, but not the
and
porgs.
Put through a fan. You know, one of them falls through a fan.
Yeah, one of them gets confetti'd.
And that's, he does, he gets confetti'd. And it's like, it's okay because he's in a mask and he's nameless and he's faceless and he doesn't have a line. Right. And the violence is totally cool because these
you're right.
But maybe the next movie that's not part of the trilogy, like Rogue One, will be about that stormtrooper and the events that lead up to him getting confetti.
I guess,
you have like a you can see what his family life is like, and he's like,
I guess I don't know.
You know,
if I'm,
it turns
I'm,
out he's
I'm
a prolific a... pog eater and stuff, and then like you don't feel so bad when he gets confetti because he's a fucking monster.
I'm just wondering whether we normalize things that we shouldn't normalize through these types of little clever Hollywood tricks and tips to get away. Because they're right on the edge of not being okay, right? Do you know what I mean? They're right. We can. They're human beings, but because we've put masks on, we can do whatever we want to them.
Well, they're mostly clones, though, right? Like, is that...
Clones of people, too!
But they're not clones in this, are they? Because Finn isn't one, is he?
Yeah, no, they were clones.
Oh, that's true.
Remember?
Yeah,
they're not clones.
They were clones,
and
but
so,
they're not
clones. But even then, if you clone a human being, are you saying that the clone is not a human being?
Are they
being?
All expendable at that point?
I don't know. It's a tough one,
I mean,
isn't
your
it?
Kids like, are like
I think
a kind
if there
of
was
clone,
duplicates of me, I would say, yeah, they're pretty expendable, actually.
No,
but
clones of people, man. That's the whole point.
I mean, people will... I don't know where I was going with that thought, but I think I was just sort of... wondering around it because it's kind of become it's kind of weird anyway. It's been there for ages, you know, it's been around for ages. People need to find harmless exits or whatever it is for their animal urges, harmless like ways to
releases.
Get out their releases. And it's a classic thing, I think, like Bertrand Russell said, that, you know, that's a thing that we need because we are cavemen and we have these urges, and maybe, you know, like having these things that are fairly
So you think we can voyeuristically satisfy our desire to see someone getting confetti?
But maybe it doesn't need to be that. Maybe it just needs to be like the Splatoon kind of, you know, cartoony.
I mean, people exploding
into puffs of fireworks.
Right. I think that's why sport is so popular. It's because essentially you're watching a struggle.
Yeah.
A physical struggle between two people, often requiring strength or skill. And it's also like we love to watch sport where an object is thrown or hit very accurately or kicked. Like there always needs to be a token involved. Tennis ball, football, basketball, baseball, a cricket ball, anything. It always seems to involve some kind of token.
Yeah, what about karate, though?
Well, karate is fighting. That's just the pure sport, like boxing, wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are some things like Formula
Wrestling.
One, which obviously probably doesn't appeal to our caveman instincts, but more of our sort of, ooh, look how fast they're going instincts.
Well, competitiveness.
Yeah, but even just seeing, look at drag racing. Drag racing, you're just watching two very loud, noisy things go, like, you know, along a track. So that's appealing to our sort of, wow, isn't that cool? So but I think a lot of sport, if you really look at it, we want to see crunching tackles and people getting kicked up in the air. We want to see amazing feats of dexterity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same kind of thing. As much as we would like to see Ugg really smash that wildebeest.
Yeah, because I don't know how much human-on-human, like, killing is built into our caveman genome, in a sense. Like, how much of that needs to be satisfied by, when you watch a movie, how much gratuitous violence does there have to be, you know? Does there have to be any? Because I watch a lot of kung fu movies and, you know, they don't have to fight necessarily 500 different guys. It's mostly just a couple of guys fighting for a while. Two badasses and they're both super badass.
Yeah,
and you're
who's
the most badass? Do you know what I mean? That's what it's about. It's like a struggle. It's like wrestling.
Here's the thing,
but
it's not
wrestling is not one guy versus 500.
It's true. Although that would be awesome.
No, yeah.
But the thing
is, movies
didn't used to be this violent. TV didn't used to be this violent. When there's a director called Sam Peckinpah, right? He directed a very famous Western called The Wild Bunch, one of my favorite movies. And this was revolutionary in terms of the violence it portrayed on screen. Right? No film had been this violent before. Like, films were just not violent. If someone shot, you'd see them, a shot of them going bang, and then you cut to a shot of the guy going erg and falling over. So having the shot of the guy pulling the trigger and someone dying in the same frame was like unheard of.
Yeah, the old war movies with like the ballerina death scenes.
Right, and
it's
like that. So nowadays, I mean, geez, if you look at, like you were saying, that guy gets turned into confetti. That wouldn't happen in a movie 50 years ago, especially a kid's movie.
Well, exactly. I mean, even in Star Wars, think about the original Star Wars. A lot of the time they were, you know, especially in the first movie, they're running away from the stormtroopers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They're not actively, like, just sizing their way through these places.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
But so if this is about satisfying some innate desire in us to see people getting torn apart, why is it only now? Why didn't we have that previously? Or was it literally because that was most people's everyday for a very long time?
Is it because this has tested well with audiences and it's this natural evolution towards what people want?
No, I think our daily lives are so non-violent and non-struggle-based in the West that we're happy to see this kind of shit. We're just like desensitized to it because we're not sensitive to it. I don't think we were ever desensitized to it. I just think we were never sensitive to it because it's just an alien concept to most of us.
I think it might just be the whole concept of facelessness, though. Like, you know, if you can't put, like, a name and a face on something, then you don't value it and you're happy to just kill it.
Maybe.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Like a stormtrooper.
On the topic of violence and people getting killed, it actually sounds in the background like that's happening in your office.
Is that Mousy?
Mousy is recording in our office, so this whole podcast has been punctuated by...
Screeching.
By Mousy screeching.
Screaming, yeah.
She isn't being strangled, I promise.
She's fine.
Maybe she is, actually.
Good. I was tempted to look, because earlier it sounded like she was sobbing, but then I realized it was all part of the video. So whatever it is she's recording... If a video comes out and
it's a tearjerker,
there's a lot of it's a real tearjerker. then you know when it was recorded. But
this podcast got up and down a lot of ways. It's not been very Christmassy. It's not been very. We were thinking about doing a live one.
It'll actually be Christmas. Yeah, we were thinking of doing a live one where me and Lewis sit in the streaming room, but. Yeah, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we could probably be able to do a live one next week if you're around, Sips. That might be nice for Pete.
Okay, we could try it. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll be around. So, and I mean, we've got the the setup for dad decks and stuff. So you'd be able to get me on the screen and stuff.
Cool.
I can do it.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, let's do it.
I've met a lot of people this year who've been big fans of Trifles, and a lot of people have said great things about this podcast.
Someone posted on the Reddit that we're one of the top downloaded comedy podcasts.
Yeah, which I can't believe. Like behind Russell Brand.
I mean, top 100.
He's actually
maybe
a real flipping celebrity and stuff. And actually is a professional, you know, knows what
wanker.
He's doing. Whereas... I don't think we should say things like that about you know, other people. I think Russell Brand's a cool guy. I'm a big fan
about
of
our
Russell
competition.
Brand.
We need to rise above it. You know, maybe this time next year we're going to be the top one downloaded comedy podcast, and then Russell Brand is going to turn around and be like, "That guy called me a wanker." It's going to discredit us.
I stand by it.
Oh, get away. Get
I'm not,
out of
here. I'm not going to be mates with Russell Brand ever.
What
I'm never going to work with Russell Brand. Why would I ever come into contact with him?
He's a nice guy.
He's not.
We might come into contact. We might have to do a podcast with him. Two the best comedy podcasts.
All right, I've
together.
Got one final word to say on it.
What?
Right.
What if one day you need blood and he donates blood to you? Would you change your mind?
No.
What if Mel's her dying? Listen to her. She needs his blood. And he's going to give
she's
it a
she's,
cheese.
Well, yeah.
She's bleeding
right,
out
would,
in there.
I would confetti him, scoop up the blood, and pour it down her neck.
That's not... Okay. Well, Jesus. All right. Well, there you go.
He's got a lot of hair, though. There'd be just like a... It'd be like really like furball-y, hairy blood.
All right. Let's end the podcast on that bombshell.
Right.
Thanks everyone for
listening. There goes the Russell Brand tie-in series we were going to do. We got a whole bunch of
ruined.
Brand deals.
Sorry about that, guys. I know a lot of you
were
looking forward
to
it, but Flax cucked us, so we're fucked now. We can't do it. So anyway, Merry Christmas and
have a great Christmas.
We'll
Happy
see you next
New
time,
Year,
everyone.
See you next time.
All right.
Bye.